Yay!
Hello.
It worked!
What worked?
I just get really happy when this thing works on the first try instead of the third or fourth try.
You were so excited. I was like, he must find a radical new method of recording. Like
no.
Something brand new. Never before done. And you're just like, I just get happy.
The app managed not to crash this time.
So stupid. I definitely want to include this.
Anything that can crack both of us up that hard just deserves an audience.
Enough of this gay shit. It says the openly bi guy. Let's do the episode.
All right.
Hello and welcome back to Cape Quarter, where we explore the history, story, and cultural impact of a different character or group every episode. I didn't plan the intro out as well as I should have, because I definitely started in the middle of exhaling a breath, and I didn't have enough air to get... It was like...
And I'm Jordan!
Where we explore the history stuff. Yeah, I'm Blue. And speaking of controlling the breath, from the breath comes fire. I'm gonna be the firebender of this episode because I'm emotionally unstable and also a weeb. So
see, is it like super basic bitch energy for me to think that I'd be an airbender? Because
would be an airbender.
I do feel like I'd be an airbender.
It is normally basic bitch energy, yes, but you actually have legitimate reasons. The same reason that your furry, your fursona would also be like a golden retriever. Like,
oh, yeah, for sure, yeah. I have a light spirit.
Yeah. You're a pussy fest.
Oh, yes.
Like correct pronunciation or anything, you're just like, yeah, that's fine.
Yeah, no, you call me anything and I'll just be like, yeah, okay.
It is one of my favorite bits that we have, where I just say something grievously insulting and you're like, sure,
yeah, I'll go with that,
and it just like cuts the legs out from under me and I'm like, oh, okay. I'm just like, well, what do I do with that?
Well, see, that is actually, this is a weird tangent to go off on immediately, but you can tell from the way that the recording started and the way our intro went that it's going to be one of those episodes, is how I dealt with being bullied in high school. And so then it just kind of switched over to a base personality default, is that I was pretty badly bullied in like the early parts of high school. And then I realized I'm funny. And if you think it's funny when you get bullied, suddenly the bullying's not fun anymore.
You know what's really funny is that legitimately does tie into the idea of you being an airbender, is using humor and redirection and deflection.
Ooh, good segue. That was brilliant.
Well, I mean, seriously, because first of all, we're doing an episode about Aang. You know,
the last fucking airbender.
Hell yeah. But they're real. Okay. I can't remember if this has ever come through here. Like, if I've ever really gone into it. I did have a stint where I was a martial arts junkie, but not like in the idea of like me practicing it. I've done a lot of fighting, but I've never officially been a part of any kind of martial arts school, even though I wanted to. But you fucking bitch. My mom would never let me join martial arts because she thought I would kill people, but like,
fair enough.
But I you know what, she wasn't wrong. In retrospect, I probably would have gotten in.
If someone gave you the skills, you might have become dangerous.
Yeah. I can't argue with that. It sucks because it's right. But I did like try to learn what I could of martial arts secondhand, yeah. Right? And one of the things that I really honed in on with Last Airbender, because it's just a really cool concept. Because like everybody and their mother can do like, okay, we have a series where people are elemental manipulators, but this one is with the caveat you can only manipulate the elements by utilizing physical martial arts forms and movements.
Huh.
Right? So they're all based on actual martial arts. Do you know about this? The four basic martial arts that influence the bending styles?
Yes, I don't remember which ones went to which styles, but I know that it's all real stuff. And that's the coolest thing about this show.
So airbending is based on Bagua or circle walking, which I first learned about, not from Avatar The Last Airbender. Can you guess where I first learned of Bagua?
I have no idea.
Have you ever seen the movie The One?
No.
Do you know of it?
I don't think so.
It's a Jet Li movie from 2001 that actually it has to do with multiverse stuff. The idea is that
I've seen the trailer for that. Yes. Okay.
There's a version of Jet Li in the multiverse or whatever his fucking name. Oh, Gabriel Yulaw. That's his name. I remember because it's the way a dude says it. And I'm sure the line is in the trailer too. Like, Gabriel Yulaw. Are you ready? And then he just looks at the guy and goes, are you? But the idea is that he's going around and he's murdering all of his doppelgangers. And because there's a set amount of energy that it's like there's one soul that's spread out amidst all the multiversal doppelgangers. Mm-hmm. And so every time he kills one, their energy like then transfers evenly to all the others, right? And it's a small enough change that when he only kills one, you don't really notice. But because he's specifically killing all the other versions of himself, he's getting stronger and stronger and more superhuman. And it gets down to the point where there's only two of him left, himself and like a Jet Li who's like a small town cop. And the two of them basically have a fucking Dragon Ball Z battle.
Nice.
It's really cool. The good one uses Bagua. Because it is a non-aggressive martial art meant to redirect an opponent's force and disarm. And the idea of airbending is it's passive, it's peacekeeping, it's not aggressive. They're trying to diffuse situations because they're not in it for power and they're in it for the freedom and the joy of life. And they also tend to be incorrigible pranksters, according to the show, because they're just there to have a good time and live life while they can.
Yeah, this is all very spiritually relatable to me, and I love it.
There is also a deeper spiritual thing to bending that I only really heard about and like thought of recently, which is that. They're talking about, there was Uncle Iroh's whole lesson where, like, you can learn something from each of the bending styles, and it's not just, like, martial arts, but it's ways of living.
Yeah.
The passion comes from fire bending, the adaptability comes from water bending, and the sturdiness comes from earth bending. But what did the world lose when it lost all the airbenders? Mm-hmm. They literally make a reference to it in episode one of the show. And it's told like a joke, but it's real. Sokka goes, you can't fight firebenders with fun.
You should try it sometime. Yeah.
Legitimately, because they were happy and joyful people, and everything became so dark and bleak and desolate when they died.
That seems... Yeah, okay. I'm more connected to airbending than I thought, because I'd never given it a whole lot of serious thought other than just... that I view myself as a pretty lighthearted person and would prefer to disarm something through talking than fighting. But I'm just the example that I was going to throw out is that there was a time that there was this kid. We actually wound up becoming friends partly because of this. And friends is the wrong word, but mutual understanding. And
yeah.
And we're like years later, he was like, hey, I was really fucked up that I like kept messing with you in high school. And I was like, yeah, don't worry about it. It's fine. Where he would occasionally like, you know, it's like we'd be like on a run with the marching band in the morning. He'd like tackle me or something, get like bloodied and stuff. There was a time that he like shoved me to the ground in like the instrument storage room, and I like bit my lip or something, and I was like, bleeding. It was like wasn't anything terrible, but I decided to, because at the time I did not have a vocal disorder, and I was a talented impressionist, and just shifted into Heath Ledger. Did never start with the head. The victim gets all fuzzy, and started doing the whole fucking monologue from the interrogation scene. And he was just like, holy shit, that was perfect. And it was just like, it takes all the, you know, then suddenly it's your show. And so stuff like that is another reason that I think I'm an airbender.
Well, what's great about this is that now I can segue into, because that was sort of a shadow talk about airbenders and mm-hmm. their culture. And now I can talk about firebenders through the lens of how I deal with situations.
Oh, yes. You're
completely different.
Yeah. So,
firebending, the martial art that they base its style off of is Northern Shaolin. The Shaolin monks are well known for being some of the most lethal isn't the right word because they don't kill typically, but skilled and powerful martial artists in the world. They still have a sort of monastic order to this day. And when I tell you it's intensive training, I mean, again, that line from fucking The Karate Kid, everything is kung fu. They live by that. Every day is kung fu training. They get their bodies beaten with bamboo sticks while they're shirtless, because
that's rough.
It causes their muscles to tense up so that getting punched later on doesn't hurt them.
They did that to Shang-Chi.
Yes. A lot of the shit that they showed in that was real martial arts training.
Yeah, it was
awesome. they do this thing where they'll have a pit of sand in front of them, and they make an open palm, and they like stab their fingers into the sand to dig through it. And what happens is that actually fractures your fingertips. But then when the bones heal, they're stronger. And it's just a bunch of shit like that. Punching the wooden pillars because it builds up the calluses and the bones in your knuckles. Like, everything is meant to make them more powerful. And they temper that through constant meditation, having to shave their heads to be humble, things like that. So they're a powerful weapon, but they're not heartless, right? And so they're meant to be like peacekeepers and everything. But the fact of the matter is, when it comes time to scrap, they will fuck you up in 10 minutes. And so they have a very aggressive martial art in the Northern style. And it's a lot of forward movement. The reason that a lot of Aang's and Zuko's battles are so interesting is because they had to replicate a specific flow of motion in their combat, where Zuko was always advancing and Aang was always trying to redirect the flow of the battle. So
those
he could never fully get away from Zuko, because Zuko would always just change direction and always come at Aang. But Zuko could also never easily land a clean hit on Aang, because Aang was always changing the direction that things were going in. So they were like countering each other, apparently. And then you throw in the elements, like fire can get powered up by oxygen, but it can also get blown out. So if Aang doesn't do it correctly, you know, he could get fucked up. It makes for a very good sort of back and forth thing going on there. But yeah, so firebenders are very passionate and powerful. They're really good at shit, and they know use those talents to get what they want. They have a lot of glory and a lot of honor. and they want to take what they feel they deserve. And sometimes it's in very.
Did you like, see the episode of Nostalgia Critic from like 8 years ago? I don't remember.
Bosco on it.
Yeah, Dante Bosco on it. He just keeps honor. just randomly yelling it as he's shooting.
I did. That's kind of what I was referencing just now. There's a part where he just starts pumping fireballs at him, going honor, honor, honor.
I love Dante Bosco.
He's a Homestuck fan. Did you know that?
Oh, that's fun.
Yeah, they put him in Homestuck as a result.
That's hilarious.
He was kissing Andrew Hussey, the creator of Homestuck. Sorry. It has nothing to do with anything I'm talking about, but it's just a fun fact. So sometimes the whole, like, I deserve this, I'm going to take it, comes in very micro ways. Like, you're disrespecting me, but I deserve your respect, so I'm going to make you acknowledge me. And then sometimes it comes in more macro ways, like, we're better than the rest of the world, so we deserve the world, so I'm going to become a global dictator.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very easy to see them as, oh, they're the bad guy. But one of the reasons I love Legend of Korra so goddamn much is because I do love Last Airbender, right?
Mm-hmm.
It had a very clear, and it's like, it wasn't always black and white 100%. Like, there was the episode where Jet, who is not a firebender, was going to murder an innocent Fire Nation old man who was the good guy in the area, right?
Yeah, love that.
Like, them going from town to town in book three, helping Fire Nation people because they were oppressed as well. Like, it wasn't like the Fire Nation are all bad people. In fact, Sokka's line of thinking in the start of the show was like that, and he was wrong. But it is like, oh, but they're the guys that would be the easiest to be bad guys, right? Kind of like Waste Slytherin in shitty fucking transphobic book is depicted. but it's like, no, because Legend of Korra had four villains.
Oh, yeah.
Them were firebenders.
Yeah, that was a good choice.
Yeah, not a fucking one of them. Two of them were waterbenders, one was an earthbender, and one was an airbender.
And one of our main cast of heroes was a firebender.
Well, yeah, but you could argue that for Last Airbender as well.
That's true.
It took
a while, though, in Last Airbender.
But then also, okay, another thing is that Uncle Iroh is one of the greatest fictional characters to ever be conceived, and he's a firebender.
Oh,
yes.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, yeah.
I still see, like, actually, I literally saw today a recommended video on my YouTube feed that was like, actual therapist versus Uncle Iroh. Does Uncle Iroh give good advice? To which my immediate answer was, yes, obviously.
Of course.
Why would you not live your life by Uncle Iroh's words?
Oh, yeah.
But anyway, all this is to say, I tend to be the type where if someone pushes me, I don't make a joke about it, or I don't deflect it with humor or try to get out of the way of the push. I get back up and I push them back harder.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I feel like, especially in America, we tend to view aggression as solely a negative thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I think that's donkey shit. I think again, the idea that you need all four of these elements to achieve balance, if you cut all aggression and passion out of your life, you would have like stability, adaptability, and fun, but then what would be your driving force?
Yeah. It's like the Blue Lanterns don't work without will to back them up.
That is incorrect. actually pushes up glasses.
Wasn't there, there's a thing where they did that at some point, right?
What? Oh, yeah, but it's like, it was this thing where there was like, oh, but you need willpower to have hope, and it's like, are you going to get into that sort of psychological stuff with any of the others? No. Okay.
No, it's just those two. Those two are tied and the rest of them.
Which is stupid. That's such a half-baked measure. I hate that shit.
They should have, if they were going to do that, they needed to tie in like all the rest of them as
yes. Like... Yes, you are correct. There should have been a psychological framework going on there, and they just was like, ah, too lazy. Don't feel like it.
Someone thought of the beginnings of that idea, and then they published it. And then they didn't get any further.
Which is basically the basis of every single DC comic. Oh, yeah, I went there.
That's fair.
I'm not saying that a bunch of them don't turn out to be good in the end. I'm just saying... This is a big part of
why they have to reboot the universe every 5 years.
Exactly. There's a pattern here with them where they're like, here's a really cool concept. Good. Rush it to print. And then they go, wait, what next? Hey, The Dark Knight Returns was really good in the 80s. Let's make three more of those.
Okay, that's what I think about the Three Jokers thing. I think they were like, how fucking mind-bending would it be if the chair that knows everything tells Batman there's three Jokers? And they're like, awesome, put it in print, put it out. And then someone was like, so who are the three Jokers? And he goes, God damn it, I didn't think of that.
Exactly.
I never thought that I'd have to actually write the rest of the story.
Yeah. Oh. Man. Especially after last week's episode of... Once again, mentioning how Akira Toriyama has a habit of doing that. I'm like, but at least he's really good at improvising. Like, he was a masterclass at flying by the seat of your pants. But DC is, they're hit or miss with that shit.
Yeah, sometimes it turns out really well. I really like Doomsday Clock. I feel like that actually turned out pretty well for what they were going for. And it does feel very last minute improv'd. But I think it worked.
I thought you were just going to say, I like Doomsday, and I was going to be like, oh, you do?
No. Yeah. Doomsday is fine. He's pretty one note.
Killed Superman that one time. That was cool.
Yeah, it's like, hey, remember when he killed Superman? Like, yeah, what should we do with him this time? I don't know. Maybe he could, like, kill Superman
again with a spear.
This is a good one. We're having a good time with this episode.
Yeah.
I think it's because we're so like happy about the subject matter that it just bleeds into a joviality about everything.
It is. I don't want to spend too much time on talking about the different styles and their philosophical implications when we could talk about the character itself that the episode is named after.
That's true. We are doing an Aang episode.
So I'll really quickly just say that Earthbending is, I can never pronounce it right. I think it's Hwangar.
Okay.
Which is an extremely, it's sort of related to sumo wrestling.
That makes sense.
It has a very rooted style. You get down low with your knees, and having a lower center of gravity and a wider stance makes you harder to knock over, makes it easier for you to knock your opponent over. It has a lot to do with very, very straight and simplistic moves, but the way you utilize them is very powerful, so it makes up for the rigid simplicity of it. And then waterbending is based on Tai Chi, actually.
Yeah, that makes sense.
A lot of sweeping and flowing arm movements, constantly adjusting the weight of your stance, pivoting your weight from one leg to the other. It's a very naturally flowing and graceful martial art, and it can be deceptively powerful because it looks so pretty that you're like, okay, but it's not going to hurt that much. Ooh, that hurt a lot. I really appreciate that they got an actual martial arts master, a Sifu, to come in, and he just started doing martial arts, and they started like drawing him doing it.
That's cool.
And that became the basis of the animation style. And what's really cool is that bending evolves as the environment evolves in Korra, because they were in a city, right? It was like, well, we can't do these giant fucking earthquaking moves that are leveling the area because it's going to fuck up the buildings. And a lot of times you're fighting to protect a building. So what happens? So your fighting style becomes more compact, more narrow, smaller but quicker moves replace the ones that were bigger and slower and more powerful. So also tie that into the fact that we want to do 1920s New York. Boxing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, but, I was about to say, it fits very well with the pro-bending stuff.
Yeah. I know that there's some controversy on whether or not pro-bending was good to have such a focus on at the start of the show.
I think it's brilliant.
Yeah. When I saw Bolin's explanation for how they fight in Republic City and Korra had to readjust her earthbending, I got it instantly. I was like, I see what they're doing, and that's really fucking cool.
On a side note, and we'll probably need to give Korra her own episode.
Yes.
But on a side note, regarding the controversy of the pro-bending, I always think it's interesting that people are upset with the level of technology advancement, because I think people are comparing, like, Earth Nation to Republic City. And it's like, yeah, that would be quite a leap if you go from horse and buggy level to 1920s New York in 70 years. But they didn't, because the Fire Nation has iron steamboats. And it's like they are pretty clearly in the 1860s to 1870s of, you know, or at least 1850s-ish.
Yeah.
Of technology. And if you go 70 years from there, yeah, you can get to the 1920s. That's pretty easy.
And here's the thing. I think forget that even from Last Airbender, it was already established that the right people with the right tools could advance technology quickly. They went from a hot air balloon being developed for the first time in season one to
war blimps.
Yeah, which was literally like 6 months of difference.
Mm-hmm.
So you give them 70 to 80 years?
Yeah. They're gonna take a pretty big leap.
They're going to be making early cars. That totally makes sense.
Yeah.
Especially because now you've also got the greatest minds from three different nations working together instead of fighting a fucking war.
Yeah.
Trying to kill each other.
You also usually get an explosion of technological advancement immediately after a war because everyone's working so hard to do better in the war.
Yes, you have a bump in advancement and productivity during a war, which everybody knows about. But then because people are still used to that level of productivity, that now when the war is over, not only do you still have that energy and that like tendency to continue creating at that pace, but you now redirect it to something more positive to try and like make up for all the destruction that just happened. And you're doing it while working together with the people you were competing against yesterday.
Yeah.
So now all of a sudden you got two minds that were constantly trying to undermine each other and pull the rug out from under their feet, working together to make something better. Yeah, there's going to be a big technological boom after that.
I love the world of Avatar. It's so cool.
It's really cool. Something that probably is going to make neckbeards hate me even more than they already do.
Oh, good.
I think Avatar tackles the themes of war better than Star Wars.
Yes.
Wow, that was a very quick reply. I was thinking there was going to be like a but no, you were just like, yeah, you're right.
Yeah, I feel like, I mean, Star Wars is very good at depicting actual battles in a very exciting way on the war front, and you've got the rebellion, and it's great at depicting the danger of allowing something to collapse into fascism for everyone. But Yeah, in terms of what a war feels like to the people and who's involved and what it does and how it changes everyone and how their relationships with each other change. Yeah, Avatar handles that better.
Well, one last thing I want to say, though, is that, again, sort of shoulders of giants, Star Wars did help Avatar find its groove. Let's be real. The finale of Book 2 is The Empire Strikes Back. It just is.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And it's so good.
Chilling. My God.
Guru is one of my favorite episodes of anything I've ever seen.
Mm-hmm.
Then The Crossroads of Destiny is one of the most... I go back and forth on whether or not The Crossroads of Destiny or Sozin's Comet is a better season finale.
Oh, that's a good... I mean, it's really hard for me not to pick Sozin's Comet because it's just... I mean, it having four parts gives it an unfair advantage because it's a sprawling epic compared
to the rest of the show. I also think about what they do with the amount of time that they had.
That's a good point, yeah.
I feel like there's a lot more packed into 20 minutes of Crossroads of Destiny than there is in 80 minutes of Sozin's Comet. Because
The only thing that Sozin's Comet has on it there then is just it's cathartic because it's all ending. Everything that's been built up is tying up here.
The first two parts of Sozin's Comet are just straight up build up.
Yep.
And it's just like, oh, okay. I mean, I don't think it's bad. I do think it's kind of necessary build up, but I do think if you're watching the four-part finale and you're expecting all four parts to, like, be going at it, then when you're watching part one and they're fighting the Melon War, you're just kind of like... Why are we doing this now? You remember the Melon Lord?
I love the Melon Lord. I also really love the scene in, I think it's the second part. It might be the third. Two and three, I get really... I know exactly where one starts and ends. I know exactly where four starts and ends. The details of what happens in two and three get blended up to me. But the scene... What?
Two ends with him getting deposited by the lion turtle on the mountain, and three starts with him shooting down Ozai's blimp.
Okay, then it's two that I'm thinking of. Is where he's on the lion turtle, and he's asking his past lives for advice about whether or not to kill the Fire Lord. And we'll probably get into a whole discussion about the characterization of this moment, but the one moment that I wanted to highlight in this was when he asks Kiyoshi, and he says that it's like, but you didn't really kill the Conqueror. His stubbornness, he stayed there, and the thing fell, and he fell. It wasn't your fault. You didn't actually kill him. And then Kiyoshi says, frankly, I don't see any difference, and I would have killed him anyway.
Yes.
I just love that. He's like, don't worry, I would have done it.
It's true. Like... See, because I get behind parts of both of their arguments because I am someone who I've had to defend myself for being the winner of a fight because someone weaker than me picked a fight with me and I beat the shit out of them. And then people are like, you hurt him so bad. Don't you feel bad? And I'm like, no.
No.
He picked a fight with me. And so my defense when I was younger was, if he punched a wall, would it be the wall's fault that his knuckles got bloodied up? No. So why is it my fault when I simply resisted him and he turned out to be a pussy-ass bitch that he wound up getting injured in a fight I didn't ask for?
I really need a deleted scene of Aang talking to the press. It's not my fault he turned out to be a pussy.
but at the same time, as I've gotten older, I also know that if I really didn't want him to be hurt, then I could have probably put more effort into avoiding him in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
But I still chose to have the confrontation. Even if he started it, I followed through. And so I understand where Aang's coming from, where it's like, but you didn't really kill him. But I also see where Kiyoshi's coming from, where she's like, I kind of did.
And she's like, I kind of did, and I totally would have if he hadn't died there.
Kyoshi's really cool. There's a reason there's
an entire... I love that Aang says, I should have known better than to ask Kyoshi.
I really thought it was funny that he was like, oh, it's a cultural thing. Obviously. I've just got to ask the airbender. She'll give me the answer that I want.
Yeah, and then she might be the most explicit in just telling him that it's like, yeah, it sucks. I'm sorry. You have to kill him.
No, she's 100% like, Aang, the reason you don't want to kill him is because of your own spiritual journey. So in a way, you're being kind of selfish and putting your wants and your needs ahead of what the world needs.
Yeah, you got to put those needs aside. It's going to hurt.
Kill that motherfucker.
Do it.
Commit a murder, Aang.
It was very powerful having all four nations' cultural backgrounds tell him that you gotta do it.
Yeah. And because, let's be real, if it wasn't for the Deus Ex Machina, then he would have had to.
Yeah, that might be the only real... I struggle to call it an issue because it's so cool. You know what I mean?
It's cool, and it made for a good plot point later on in Korra, but I do think it is convenient writing.
Yeah, it kind of overly conveniently wraps up his moral dilemma.
And you know what? I'm not one to be like, if everything's grittier, then it's better. Like, I think that Power/Rangers thing was shit, and we should all acknowledge that it was shit.
Yes.
And again, the creator knew it was shit, and that was
that was the point.
But I do feel like maybe if we weren't limited to this being a Nickelodeon series, we could have had a very poignant ending where he was like, you know, maybe he would have had to kill Ozai and he would have been like confronting his own feelings about murder. Like, does this make me a bad person? Like, is ending a life for the sake of preserving millions of others a moral bad? Or is it a moral good, or is it neither? Like, I think that would have been a really deep... Like, can you imagine, like, an epilogue episode where he just eventually comes to terms with the fact that, like, I did that, but I had to, and...
Yeah, that would be interesting.
I don't think I'm a bad person, but I will endeavor to work harder at being a good person going forward.
Yeah.
Because I think that would be a very mature way of looking at it, is that... What I did wasn't a bad thing, but it could become a bad thing. So I'm going to try harder from now on to be a good person.
Yeah, you kind of delve a little bit into the Batman mentality of, like, you don't want to let yourself think that that's always the right option. And it's part of why Batman works so hard not to do it, is because he's like, I mean, if I make it that easy, it's always going to be that easy.
I've been watching these guys react to, like, Young Justice and Teen Titans and stuff like that. Mm. And they keep being like, this is why I don't like superhero media. You should just kill them. Batman...
Woefully missing the point.
And the Joker kills people. And it fucking sucks. You should just kill that motherfucker. And I saw someone in the comments say what I desperately wanted these people to hear. Mm-hmm. Why is it Batman's fault, not the justice system's?
Yeah.
Why does he have to be judge, jury, and executioner? Why has a jury of Joker's peers never once in all of these decades gone, okay, this guy's got to die?
Yeah. Stop putting him in there. You know he's going to leave.
Yeah. It's like
Batman didn't decide whether he goes to Arkham or gets executed. Batman just stopped him from doing the bad things.
Yeah, he let the law take over, and the law constantly drops the ball.
Yeah, that's a really... I've never really thought of it in that framing. That's a really fun way to put it. I also think it's interesting whenever someone says, oh, this is why I don't like superheroes, you should just kill them. It's like, yeah, those are out there too. You like some superheroes. You just don't... Yes. You don't need to lie to yourself and say, and that's where we get into the Batman should kill arguments that I've seen on the internet lately.
Here's my thing with that too. Every single person that goes, Batman should fucking kill them, it's the only thing that makes sense. They're always fans of the Joker.
Oh yeah.
they're always like, I love the Joker. He's like my favorite villain. Well, yeah. If he's your favorite villain, why do you want him to die?
Yeah, why do you want him to stop getting stories?
He can only be your favorite if he's alive and doing things.
I am usually very against gatekeeping, but I started gatekeeping on that particular argument where I was like, then you don't like Batman. You think he looks cool, you like the gadgets, you like the martial arts, you don't like him. You don't like the character, you don't like what he stands for. Feel free to stan some other superhero that's totally fine with killing someone every other day. That's not him.
I agree. If you want someone who's cool and smart and strong and has gadgets and training that also kills people, there's a bunch of those out there.
Yeah.
You don't need to be a fan of Batman. You're just clinging to the most mainstream and well-recognizable one.
Yeah.
In which case, you're a fucking poser regardless. I don't like the superheroes because I think that they're going to make me popular with the ladies. Guess what? That was never in the cards until maybe the past 10 years.
Yeah.
No, I got into superheroes because I think they're really fucking cool and teach good lessons. That's why some of my favorite, when I talk about my favorite superheroes, they're lesser known ones like The Flash. I mean, The Flash is more well known today, but.
Yeah, if you go back 15 years, he's kind of obscure relative to the general random person on the street.
I told someone like 3 or 4 days ago, a dude who came up to pick up DoorDash because he saw I was wearing a Batman mask. He was like, who's your favorite Batman character? And I was like, Nightwing. He's like, good pick. I never hear anyone say that.
Yeah, I occasionally wear a Batman Beyond shirt.
Oh, Batman Beyond's so fucking good.
And if anyone recognizes it, I'm just ecstatic. I'm like, yeah, cool.
Oh, shit. Wait, I had
Nightwing. I have a Nightwing shirt, too, that if someone goes, ah, cool Nightwing shirt, I'm like, oh, thank God.
There was something recently where a guy had a shirt that was like, don't panic. His shirt said, don't panic.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm looking at him, and again, he was like at Uber Eats or something, right?
Yeah.
And so I go to hand him the food, and he's about to leave, and I go, hey, quick question. Is that Hitchhiker's Guide? He goes, you're the first person. I've had this shirt for years, and nobody's
ever. Oh, I didn't think of it. Oh, that's so funny.
Yeah. I don't know. I felt really happy. That made my day. I was like, yeah, I know Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
That's really fun, and I love that. I have had where I've worn the Batman Beyond shirt, and someone's like, cool Red Hood shirt. And I have no problem with that. I'm like, hey, you know what? You know someone other than Batman. They're both red. You got close. I appreciate that you know and care.
You know what? I probably be lying if I said that right now I could tell you what exactly the Batman Beyond logo was, because I'm not really good with subtle differences in shapes. So if it was like a gun to my head and somebody was like, which of these five red bat symbols is the Batman Beyond logo? I'd be like, oh.
Yeah, that's true. If there's more than one red one in the mix, it's going to get harder for people to notice.
Yeah. If you put Batman Beyond, Red Hood, and Batwoman symbols.
Oh, yeah.
I'd be like, fuck.
And at that, it'll depend on which Batwoman. Red Hood and Batman Beyond kind of always look about the same. But I feel like different Batwomans, there's going to be different shapes.
Okay, let's recenter.
All right. Anyway, if Aang lets himself kill the Fire Lord, there's maybe a chance that he starts to view it as the easy way out. And I think that's part of his concern here.
Well, you know what's funny is that you traded that in for him using spirit bending as the easy way out.
Yeah.
Because he definitely has done it at least twice in his life, and I think it's more arguable about whether or not he really had to the second time, because was the guy a menace and a danger? Yeah, he could take out a courtroom full of people, but he didn't have a national army behind him.
Yeah, and it seemed like Aang, once he entered the Avatar state in that scene, was no longer affected by the bloodbending. So it's like, yeah, you can kick his ass right now. You don't need to take his powers away.
Yeah. You know, I guess if it's like, I don't know, I guess you are kind of in a rock and a hard place where it's like, I don't want to kill this guy if I don't have to, but like if we imprison him, if we have literally any living guards, he can get out.
Yeah, that's true. It does get really hard to deal with him. You'd have to like, yeah, and I mean, some benders don't need to do the martial arts. So I was going to say, you immobilize him, but I don't know if that would work.
I was literally going to be like, cut off his arms. That'll solve it. And then I went, oh, wait, but
we meet someone the next season.
Ming-Wa exists, and she's also a waterbender, so she kind of proves
that
100%.
And like, Bumi pretty much proves that if a fucking eyebrow can move, some of these people are talented enough to do their bending.
Yeah. I mean, that. Well, you know what? I was going to say he's an exceptional bender, but I guess Yakone was too, to do the shit that he was doing.
Yeah.
I guess he was handcuffed, and he just glanced at some people and was like fucking them up. So, you know. Anyway.
Yeah. Interesting.
All that to say, I feel like they just sort of traded in the last resort of killing someone for the last resort of spiritually castrating them.
Yeah, true.
Also, okay, again, this isn't a Korra episode, but it does tie into it. I just think it's really fucking cool that they used bloodbending, because there's clearly some kind of physical reaction going on with the effect of bending, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like you need bodily movements as well as your spiritual whatever, like, yeah, to do what bending is. And so the idea that it was like, hey, I can't actually spirit bend the way that Avatar Aang could, but maybe if I put a blood clot in someone's brain in just the right place,
mm-hmm,
maybe I can block their bending. And it works.
Yeah, that That's also really... tells us that you can instant death someone with blood bending.
Oh, 100%. I don't think that was ever a question. Like, again, it's one of those, but because it's Nickelodeon.
Yeah. Type deal. Dude, I remember that Blind Wave, when they were watching through Avatar, yeah, The Last Airbender, at some point Eric was like, I wonder if an earthbender could, like, use the iron in their blood to do an aneurysm. And I was like, that is such a fucked up thought, but it's really cool.
But what's really great about the whole Blind Wave reaction to that series too, is that they predicted bloodbending really early on, and that's what I love about it, is that the idea of it, it's why I love anime. It's one of the greatest strengths of anime over American media, and again, Avatar is pretty much an American anime.
Yes.
Is that when you introduce a power system, you introduce basic rules, which then the viewer can extrapolate on and go, wait, so if you can do this, could you apply it in this way? And a lot of times the show goes, yes, you can, good thinking. And it makes you feel really fucking cool when you figure it out. Like, for instance, I'm currently watching Hunter x Hunter, okay? In Hunter x Hunter, their power system is called Nen. And with Nen, you control the aura that comes from your body, right? And you manipulate it in ways. And there's four basic applications of Nen. You have Ten, where your aura shrouds your body to make like a thin defensive shield, essentially, to make you more resilient against attacks, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's Zetsu, where you shut the aura off on your body and you become practically invisible to detection, right? Like, people can't sense you easily. There's Ren, where you amplify your aura, like you're charging, like it's a Dragon Ball Z thing, and you can use that either for psychological attacks or just to empower yourself in certain ways. And then there's Hatsu, which is where you project your aura in some kind of way to achieve an observable effect. And one of the early things we see is that if you use Ren, but specifically in your eyes, you can use a technique called Gyo, where you can see aura, even aura that people have used a technique called In to make invisible, right? So from there I went, so you can amplify the aura in your body, you can turn off the aura in your body, you can surround the aura in your body around your body parts, you can focus your aura in specific places, and you can explosively release your aura. Does that mean you could turn off all the power in your body except like in your fist or something? Like a super mega punch. And guess what? That's what the main character figures out later. And he does.
Oh my god.
And I was like, oh, that's so fucking cool.
That is cool.
And so the fact that people can think like that with bending is one of the many reasons I'm like, yeah, it's an anime. That's one of the greatest strengths of anime, is playing with the power systems. It works for stands. To a lesser extent, it works for Reiatsu. which is Bleach. I'm sure you don't know. It works for Chakra. For Naruto. Like a good example with Naruto is that they learn the ability to use chakra, the energy of their body, to sort of magnetically attach their feet to a surface so they can like run up trees or stand under a ceiling or even walk on water, right?
Yeah. That's cool. And then
at one point we see it utilized in a different way where Sasuke steps on a kunai knife and like attaches it to his foot. So when he lifts his foot up and he kicks it forward, it shoots the kunai out. I was like, oh, that's fucking cool.
That is cool.
So what all do, or here, let me ask you real quick, how much more time do you have to talk so I know how
Let's
much
go we with 10-ish minutes.
Okay. We've spoken a lot about like certain aspects of Aang's thought process. I'm kind of trying to figure out what I want to zero in on here, because it's like there's different things you could talk about with Aang. You could talk
And we talked a lot about the general airbenderness, but also him specifically of being fun and caring about having that light spirit, like the scene where they first meet the little civilization with the mechanic at one of the air temples.
Ordinary temple.
Yeah, and we see the mechanic's son flying around in his glider, and he's like, okay, that one might have an airbender spirit. he's like, the rest of them are not moving correctly. You can tell that there's no joy and freeness in the way that they're moving. They're just gliding. But that
it's really cool, he's very spirited. It's really cool that the guy who can barely experience mobility, who felt so free and alive when he was flying because he had all this mobility all of a sudden.
Yeah, it's like a cool scene.
Him to the airbender spirit. I also think it's really cool that we see all four of the air temples in the show when we're in related regions. Like at the very start of season one, we're in the South Pole. So
this is the Southern Temple.
Episode 3, the first one we see is the Southern Air Temple. And then towards the end of Season 1, as we're approaching the Northern Air Temple, like literally before the last three episodes where we're in the North Pole, right before then in Episode 17 is when we hit the Northern Air Temple.
Yeah.
When we're in the Earth Kingdom, for the Guru, we visit the Eastern Air Temple. And then in Season 3 in the Fire Nation, they hide out in the Western Air Temple.
Yeah, that's really cool.
Yeah.
I also really like that the Western Air Temple is upside down.
It is very cool. like a nightmare architecture-wise.
Yeah.
That's one of those things where I'm just like, it's a cartoon. I'll let it be. but it's not to say that things like that exist in real life, but I personally would not want to live in a temple where everything is precariously on the underside of a cliff. I wouldn't want to live on a temple that's on top of a cliff.
No, that doesn't seem good. No.
No. But I think for our last few minutes, I kind of like to zero in on his chakras that were depicted in The Guru.
Sure,
I mentioned it's one of my favorite episodes of anything ever, and part of that is, one, I really love the spirituality of it. I love the aesthetic of chakras. I love it so much that I took an online quiz about which of my chakras was the strongest. It's the throat chakra, by the way.
Oh, cool.
Which has a lot to do with truth. And I think that's accurate. I don't tend to beat around the bush. I tend to say things very plainly as I see them. As you know.
Yeah.
I kind of wanted to go up the body and discuss Aang's relationship with the different chakras. So the root chakra was that was the one that was blocked by fear, right?
I think so.
Yeah, I remember, because it's like right as soon as they started, he saw the vision of Ozai in the fire and he screamed and cut to commercial break.
Okay, yeah.
So his fear was very basic upon the surface, like, oh, it's the final boss. But I feel like it also just had to do with like the fear of the expectation of having to deal with this overwhelming threat, which sort of leads into his other stuff, because after that, it's okay, they didn't say it. The second chakra is basically your dick. It's your groin area. Which is why it has to do with like pleasures and very base instincts and stuff like that. Wow, I brought up this topic and was like, we're going to do it. And I'm having some trouble remembering what each thing was, to be honest.
Yeah, it's tough to remember because there were a bunch of them. And they were only in that episode, really. So
they were color-coded. It was quite, so it should be easy for me. And yet I can't remember what the other one is. So we're just going to say. The stomach chakra for him... was that the one that was like your grief or your failure or whatever? And he got upset about that time that he burned Katara. And I was really happy to see that one because I had kind of felt like there was no consequence for him being a shoe deal in that episode. But clearly, he never stopped thinking about that. And the fact that the proclamation he made in that episode in season one of I'm Never Gonna Firebend Again, he actually hadn't let go of that. He was planning at that point to fight the Fire Lord without firebending.
That was cool. That was interesting.
100% gotten him killed.
Oh, yeah.
Because even just the skill of being able to deflect fireballs or redirect lightning, like, he needed that shit. Okay, four was an easy one because that's the heart chakra, and that talked about love and loss. Mm-hmm. And he saw the vision of all of the Air Nation before him. And he, Guru Patik was like, you got to let them go, but also remember that their love hasn't disappeared from this world. Nothing dies. Everything in life is simply transformed. And so their love has taken the form of a new love. And then he thinks of Katara. And that was great because that's the scene where it like cuts back to them in the real world. And Aang is meditating and he's smiling and he starts to cry.
Oh, yeah, that got me.
And just him asking in this very vulnerable little child voice that we never hear from him, just for more of that disgusting juice.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, shit, that got me. I started crying. Then the throat chakra, which It's truth, so it's blocked by lies, including the lies we tell ourselves. And one of the greatest lies of this world, and this was a lesson that genuinely changed my philosophy on life after I left there, but did this for me, is the illusion of separation. We draw borders on maps, and we say, you're this kind of people, kind of people, but we're all part of the same world. We're all one people. We divide ourselves, but there's no real division.
And I love when they're showing, when they're saying that, they show the elemental map that we've been looking at the whole series, and then suddenly all the colors get wiped off of it, and they're all the same color.
Yeah.
That's, oh, dude.
It's so good, and it's
that very is a simple. Powerful moment.
I was going to say it's very simple, and it's powerful, and it immediately opens your mind in the span of a few seconds, or at least that's what it did for me. Because we do, again, especially in America, we tend to put a lot of stock into the idea that genetics inform who you are as a person, to the point of, if you're a man or a woman, then your genetics, you're going to be like a different species. And if you're a Mexican or a black, then you're different from a white. Because it's like, that's bullshit. We made all of that up. Like, yeah. There's cultural differences, but that only exists because people were separated from each other. Like, nowadays, anyone can go anywhere. You can be a part of any culture. You can take any lesson from any other place in the world. That should be evident from the fact that we're learning a lot of these Chinese, Indian, and Japanese philosophies in an American kids show.
Yeah.
So, again, the throat chakra really resonates with me. And no, it's not just because they color-coded it blue. And then it was the third eye chakra, which I can't remember. it was the pinkish purplish one.
Is this the last one?
No, because the last one is the crown of the head.
Okay, then I don't remember the second to last one.
But because so the idea is that it's a straight line going up your body, and the reason that the first chakra is basically at your taint, right, is that if you're sitting in lotus position, that's where you're literally connected to the earth. That's why it's the earth chakra.
Yeah.
Or the root chakra. It is where, it's literally the energy goes from the earth, which is the most primal and basic part of life, all the way up to where you start to connect with the cosmos, the crown of your head, where you reach enlightenment and detachment from this world, but also moving on to something greater out there amidst the starry sky, or the heavens, or whatever have you. So that's why when he was in the crown chakra, he was up in space, and there was like a road, and there was like giant cosmic version of himself there, because it was the version of him that he could be if he connected to the world around him. But then he gave that up because here's what I see a lot of people, they don't seem to get it. They're like, he achieves all this power, but he never gives up on Katara. And it's like, he kind of does, though, because you have to reframe the way you're thinking of it. The chakra doesn't demand that you not be in a relationship.
Mm-hmm.
If that was the case, no avatar from the past would have had a wife.
Yeah.
And they all do. It was a very funny thing that I noticed recently, that all of the avatars that we know of having relationships, they all get with women, even the women.
Yeah.
it's the idea that you can't make them your whole world. You have to be ready to let go of earthly attachments if the call demands that you do that, right? Mm-hmm. And it, again, not to talk about Korra too much, but Zaheer understood that. So while he was upset when Pali died, he also pretty quickly was like, okay, she's gone. I have to accept this. I can now focus 100% on my mission. Mm-hmm. And that's what gave him the power to fly. And it's a similar thing. Aang never was like, I can never be with you, Katara. Guys like us don't get the girl. That wasn't the point. The point was he needed to not obsess over her. His job, first and foremost, was to be the Avatar. And when the call came, he was the Avatar. He wasn't there worrying about what Katara was doing in the final battle. He was focusing on his battle. And when that battle was over and they were in a time of peace, then he could be with Katara.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's a great lesson to learn from that, because and I'm guilty of this too. A lot of us put romance as like the purpose for living.
Yeah.
And it's not. It's one of the great joys of living, finding someone you can be a companion with, but you also need to be happy with yourself. You can't be... a relationship is meant to enhance your happiness, not create it. And to find true fulfillment in life, you need to be comfortable in quiet moments. You need to have your own identity, your own vision of your future, your own mission or purpose or whatever you want to call it. Aang's mission was to be the Avatar, but every single person out there also needs to, and it doesn't need to be some big life-changing thing, and it doesn't even need to be that concrete. My quote-unquote purpose in life right now is to try and take the traumas and the issues that I've been through, and while trying to find my own stability, teach people and maybe see the next generation not have to go through so much of the shit that I went through. That's what I find my purpose to be. And it's not one that was given to me. It's one I made for myself.
Hmm.
And Aang's was given to him.
Yes.
It's not exactly the same circumstances, but he reframed his thinking. Now he also did cheat.
That's fair.
He got the combat acupuncture treatment, causing his PTSD to reawaken his ancestral spirits. Okay, mm-hmm. Given that happened, but I still think it was kind of earned, because in the Crossroads of Destiny was when he reframed his thinking, right?
Yeah.
So it's like he was already ready for that all throughout season 3, but he needed that last bit of physical pressure, literally. Anyway, all this is to say, Aang is really cool. He teaches a lot of great life lessons. I don't think people always get the right lessons from the show, but that's what makes it a piece of art, is that it can be interpreted a bunch of different ways.
Mm-hmm.
Jordan, do you have any final thoughts on Aang?
Oh man, I just love that guy so much, and we've said a lot about how fun he is and how interesting he is as a character. There was an offhanded ADHD thought from an hour ago that I just wanted to throw back in, which is that my favorite part of the big final battle, in my opinion, the most cathartic part of the big final battle, is the part where he's in the Avatar state and Ozai is frantically running away. It's like the fight is over. Ozai has lost. He is desperately trying to escape the Avatar state.
The shading on Aang's face when he first starts making the air bubble and he's above Ozai looking down on him in the shadows.
That's hardcore.
So terrifying.
That's hardcore.
Yeah.
That was my last thought. That's all I got.
It's really good. And I know there's some weirdos out there that still haven't seen Last Airbender. If for some reason you listen to this entire thing and you haven't watched Avatar The Last Airbender, first of all, don't watch the live action one. I've got it under good authority now that, as I predicted, Netflix fucked some of the aspects of the show up.
That's not surprising.
Stop making things live action. Why did they take away Sokka's misogyny arc? That shit's important.
Yeah, they should have kept that in.
Yeah. But you should watch the original. You should watch the 2005 Avatar The Last Airbender series, and you know what? You should also watch Legend of Korra. But if you need some convincing on that, we will at some point in the future, maybe not next week, but whenever, do a Korra episode.
Mm-hmm.
And I've got a lot to say about her, so I will want that one to be longer than an hour.
Okay, we'll have to schedule that one for a weekend.
Yeah, that's fine. Okay. I think that's gonna about do it. Real quick, we said that you're an airbender, I'm a firebender. Do you have any people in mind for who might be a water or earthbender?
Oh man, I got no idea. I've never thought about it for other people.
ask your friends to take the official bending quiz. There's an official bending quiz on the Avatar website now. I took it, and because like I had taken BuzzFeed quizzes or whatever, and it was like firebender, and I was like, oh yeah, well let's see what Avatar Studios has to say. Oh, it says I'm a firebender. Okay. Yeah, makes sense.
Yeah.
All right. Anyway, and if you want to take the official Avatar bending quiz, I can link it in the Cape Corner Discord, which you can join and like talk to us and stuff. Wouldn't that be fun?
Oh yeah.
You can also make suggestions for future episodes that you want to hear. You can follow me at BeyondBlue2 on Twitter. No, on Tumblr. I don't use Twitter anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Am I BeyondBlue13 on Tumblr? It's in the look. There, I put all the links for all the things in the description of the episodes. And you're at Jordan Blue Man everywhere.
Everywhere.
And you should listen to Jordan's other podcasts.
If I ever put out another episode,
Fandom Optimists. And you should listen to my other podcast, The Replica Program. And Jordan, where can they find all these wonderful podcasts?
In the link tree for the Hall of Pods Podcast Network.
And who else is part of it? I'm quizzing you.
Oh, it's also the SJW Comic Book Club, True Believers of Comic Book Podcast, and Movies to Watch Before You Die.
You get a gold star. and if you wish, you can financially support me with my Spotify for Podcasters page. It works the same way as Patreon. I noticed that they've added an actual button on the page, at least on mobile, where it just says like support the series. Thank you for making it that and not making me have to give out a fucking different link for people to click on. We'll see if I get that penny that I need.
Mm-hmm.
I still need one more cent to be able to make a withdrawal. Okay. I think that's gonna about do it. Everybody, thank you for listening. Stay strong, stay true to yourselves, and remember, we can all be heroes.